Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome to the Daily Jungle. What a busy day of sports, starting off with the tragic news of Roy Halladay's passing. The two-time Cy Young Award winner passed away after crashing his plane yesterday at the way too young age of 40. Meanwhile, UCLA is in China to open the college basketball season, and LiAngelo Ball and two of his teammates were arrested for allegedly shoplifting at a Louis Vuitton store. You'll get my take, and it may not be what you expect. Plus, Johnny Manziel was spotted in Mexico after gaining maybe, 5 pounds. And of course, you knuckleheads piled on and crushed the guy. We also had three excellent guests. We had Shaquem Griffin of the UCF Knights, Gonzaga basketball coach Mark Few, Toronto Raptors head coach Dwayne Casey. Alvy, it is time for you to do what you do every single day at this time. Roy Halladay. We learned of the tragic news involving Halladay, a two-time Cy Young Award winner and an eight-time All-Star, that he died in a plane crash. Authorities say that he was flying an Icon A5 amphibious aircraft around 1 p.m. yesterday when it crashed 10 miles west of St. Petersburg, Florida. He was the only person on board. And to use the word was, in his case, is simply surreal. I can't believe I'm talking about Roy Halladay in the past tense. I can't believe that he's gone at age 40, leaving behind a wife and two sons. Remember, in his prime, there was not a more dominant pitcher than Roy Halladay. Two Cy Young Awards, 67 complete games, a perfect game, and then 5 months after that, a no-hitter in his first ever postseason start. So calling him a fierce competitor does not do him justice. The phrase, your favorite player's favorite player, gets thrown around quite a bit, but Halladay was that. Even opposing pitchers loved to watch him work. Saw that he was that dedicated, that nasty, that good, and that he did work that hard. In a business full of hard workers, he was the hardest worker. From Phillies reliever Chad Durman, who told ESPN, quote, when he would walk by you after a 6 a.m. workout in spring training, when stretching wasn't until 10, you'd think that's what you would draw up a pitcher to look like. 6'6", wide-shouldered, with tree trunks for legs. Then you'd see him on the team plane with two laptops and a tablet open in front of him, watching all the at-bats of the guys that he was going to face and taking extensive notes, end quote. And in retirement, he was starting to share that knowledge and insight with others, both in the Phillies organization and on the youth team that he coached. You also did not have to know Roy Halladay to know how much he loved flying. Just go to his Twitter page and you can see one pic after another of him sharing his excitement and joy for flying. Last month, a video from the plane with the caption, can't begin to explain all the breathtaking views I've seen through the open windows of demos, and now my very own Icon A5, thanks to all at Icon. Another with the note, quote, what do clouds feel like? I didn't know either until I got my new Icon A5. I'm getting bruises on my arms from constantly pinching myself. He went on, I've dreamed about owning an A5 since I retired. Real life is better than my dreams. Thanks, Kirk, and everyone at Icon Aircraft. Reading through that Twitter page is heartbreaking because you see one pic after another with Roy in a plane or Roy and his father, from whom he inherited the love of flying. The latest photo you see is a tweet from Sunday of a photo with Roy celebrating a championship with his son's youth baseball team. I mean, it's heartbreaking. Now, I'm not going to say that at least he died doing what he loved, because to me, there's nothing positive about a 40-year-old with a wife and kids dying in a plane crash. But maybe that idea of him doing what he loved is something that will, maybe, possibly, bring some level of peace to the family in time. But again, forget for a moment how great he was as a pitcher, and he was great. Hall of Fame good. But listen to what those who spent time with him had to say about him. Ryan Howard tweeted, such a sad day. We lost a great ball player, but an even better human being. Many prayers to Brandy, Ryan, and Braden. We will miss you, Roy. Dan Heron tweeted, I wanted to be Roy Halladay. I'm heartbroken. Rest easy, Doc. And Chase Utley posted on Instagram, quote, my heart hurts writing this. I can still remember the first day we met. It was 5:45 a.m. on the first day of spring training when I arrived. He was finishing his breakfast, but his clothes were soaking wet. I asked him if it was raining when he got in. He laughed and said, no, I just finished my workout. I knew right then he was the real deal. Thank you, Roy, for allowing us to witness what it takes to be the best. We will all miss you. I mean, I could spend the entire program running down one story after another from a teammate or an opponent who loved and admired him. There's one story after another about Holiday's legendary work ethic and his discipline. Here's another one. Matt Gelb of Philly.com wrote that he handled his perfect game against the Marlins in 2010 this way. Quote, the night he achieved perfection in Miami, he completed his normal 40-minute post-game workout before answering questions at a news conference. Holiday took a call from the vice president. He showered. He phoned his wife. He said goodnight to his sons, who had watched every out. Then he arrived at the ballpark the next day at 8:45 a.m. for another workout. And then a few months later, he bought watches for 60 teammates and club employees, even the bat boy, with the inscription, we did it together. Thanks, Roy Halladay. Former Phillies GM Ruben Amaro Jr. said, quote, my brother David got me a Rolex one year. He said, how come you don't wear my watch? And I said, I don't wear your watch because Roy Halladay gave me this watch. Rest in peace, Roy Halladay. Shaquem Griffin is my guest. Shaquem, it's good to have you back on the show. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thank you for having me again.
Always good to have you. All right, so you beat SMU 31-24 the last time out in a game where the offense had some struggles, but you were able to find a way to get it done. Your coach, Scott Frost, said, we found ourselves in a close game that we probably should not have been in, and I love the way our team responded, end quote. So how did you guys go about responding to that challenge and finding a way to win?
I mean, I think the whole thing for our team was to make sure that we didn't break under pressure. And knowing that it was a close game and we wasn't playing at our best, our whole thing was to come together as a team and figure out a way that make sure that we can support each other. And, you know, the offense was supporting us all the way, and knowing that they supported us and knowing that we had to get a stop. You know, we came on that last drive and we used to start dancing and everybody was in tune, the fans was in tune. And, you know, we created our own momentum on that. And it's kind of hard to, you know, be in the offense and you seeing the defense was dancing and interacting with the crowd and stuff and trying to come out and, you know, make big plays, to trying to win a game. And it's tough when we create our own momentum.
UCF linebacker Shaquem Griffin joining us. You know, I had Scott Frost on the show last month, and that was after the team returned to the top 25 for the first time since 2013. We talked about how important that was as a milestone for the fans. But for you as players, what did that mean? I mean, was it a big moment, or was it just another day working towards your ultimate goal?
I mean, for us, I would say it was just another day working towards our goal. You know, we never want to get beside ourselves and, you know, think about everything other than our goal is to finish the season strong. So we are really big on making sure that we tell not only the older guy but the young guy to stay focused on the task at hand. That's focused on one game at a time.
All right, to that point, I mean, you go to a program that has had some down years to suddenly having success, a lot of success. I mean, it'd be pretty easy to lose focus for the guys to let the success go to their heads. As one of the leaders on that team, how have you gone about making sure that that does not happen?
I mean, our whole thing for me is just to remind guys where we came from. You know, I was that player who's been here when we was up, and I was here when the team was down. And, you know, we got young guys here who's new to success, and I want them to kind of feel where we come from when, you know, you go through a season 0-12 and you know how it feels to lose. And now that we know what it takes to keep winning, we want to make sure that we remind the guys, like, if you don't want to lose, if you don't want to have that gut feeling of just going home after a loss, you know, you want to keep doing the same thing that you've been doing to get here. And, you know, it's important because we got young guys who listen to us. And I think that's what makes us a good team, where you can have young guys who not let everything and letting the hype go to your head, but they're willing to come back to the practice Monday and go just as hard as they did last week.
Shaquem Griffin joining us. Now, you had a huge year last season, and you were named the Conference Defensive Player of the Year. Then in the offseason, you announced that you were going to be sleeping at the team facility during training camp. So what led you to that decision, and what was that experience like?
I mean, the experience for me was to get everything I can get out of my last year, and being able to sleep inside the Wayne Dench and being able to, you know, get extra study time in, it allowed me to learn more than what I already knew. And it's crazy because standing in there and not being able to, you know, usually go home and watch TV or play the game, I was able to watch film and, you know, see the mistakes before our coaches even correct us on it. And, you know, it helps a lot because in the game, I can already know if something breaks or something go wrong, I can already say, okay, this happened. We got to go to the board and tell the coach, okay, we can fix this or we can do better than that, and we can come out and make a stop. And that started all in the offseason, you know. That was a big thing for me, was learning more than what I already knew. I can learn the DBs, I can learn the D-line, and, you know, that's important, where if something bad happened, I can be able to catch it immediately and we can stop it right then and there.
Can you clones give me one moment so I could talk to you about something very important? Stamps.com. Listen, these days, you can get practically everything on demand, such as our podcast. Listen whenever you want, when it's convenient for you. So let me ask you, why are you still going to the post office and dealing with their limited hours when you can get postage on demand with Stamps.com? Anything that you can do at the post office, you can now do right from your desk. As an example, the holidays are coming up. My wife, Janet, is all about the Christmas card. We send out hundreds, literally hundreds of Christmas cards, and there's no way we could do it without Stamps.com. I'm going to print my own postage. I'm going to do it when I want and do it at home. Trust me, with the holidays coming up, you should do the exact same thing, and you'll thank me for it. Go to Stamps.com, hit the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in jungle. That's Stamps.com, enter jungle for a special, special offer. A four-week trial, which includes postage and a digital scale. Do not wait. You want to go to Stamps.com, and before you do anything else, hit the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in jungle. That's Stamps.com, enter jungle. Stamps.com. Never go to the post office ever again. I know I won't. Stamps.com. Now it's back to our Daily Jungle. Now listen, you were all in. You were all in. You told the Orlando Sentinel that you got a blow-up mattress and a comforter. You went to the store, quote, you got snacks, water, Powerade, Pedialyte, everything you needed for everything, chips and sandwiches, so you were fine when you got there if you got hungry. Now, one of your teammates, Tristan Hill, was pretty well convinced that you were doing that not to get in the extra work in the film room or the weight room, but you just wanted extra sleep because you cut out your travel time. So, were you prepping for the season, or were you there just to get more sleep?
Well, for me, it was prepping for the season, and being that, I was able to catch more sleep. And you know, it's important where you can knock about two birds with one stone, where you can get extra sleep and do more film study and learn more. So I think that was important for me. Was, you know, when I first got there, it was a scary thing for me. Well, you've been in a big facility by yourself, and you know, hearing the air conditioner come on at night, you think it's a ghost, but it's really not. So it's kind of funny, you know. I was nervous at first, but you know, once I got used to it, and you know, I was like, you know what, I'm in it to stay. You know, I even had my brother calling me like, you're not going to stay there for another day. And I'm like, no way. He said, I'm not going to stay. I got to make sure I prove him wrong. And I stayed the entire camp.
Yeah, I'm going to get to your brother in a minute. Now, I was going to say the entire camp. So how many days and nights were you actually there?
How many days? I mean, I stayed in the entire camp. So I would say about 21, 22 days.
Wow. Inside the facility. That's incredible. You know, when you and I spoke last season, we talked about your journey to this point and the fact that your left hand was amputated when you were 4 years old. And as your star has risen as a football player, more and more people are now familiar with that story. So what's it been like to share that with the rest of the world and then all the responses that you've received?
I mean, it's awesome. Being able to, you know, showcase everything I've been going through and showcase the, you know, the adversity I went through and being able to overcome it and being able to show the world that, you know, that's an amazing feeling to me, and it goes to show that the hard work that I put in is well worth it, and I want to be able to show everybody that, you know, if you're willing to work for it, you know, you're going to get results from it, and that's the big thing is, you know, you have God, you have children, you have those who's willing to work, but they don't know how long it's going to take, and the whole thing is just trusting what you're doing, and I want to be able to be that image for everybody to know that if you keep working at your goal, you know, it's not going to come when you want it, but when it comes, it's going to feel good when you accomplish it.
You know, so people hearing that story obviously are going to be moved by that. You become a role model and an inspiration. What's it mean to you to know that you've got that kind of platform and that ability to inspire and motivate? What's that feel like?
I mean, it's an amazing feeling. You know, it's something that everybody can't say they're doing. And I feel good that what I'm doing and what I'm working for is creating a cause for a lot of people. And being able to be the outside looking in and being able to see a guy who's willing to do whatever it takes and give it their all to accomplish what they want, you know, it's not only an amazing feeling for me, but those looking in. You know, at me showing one guy or girl that, you know, they can show others. And, you know, it's just going to be ongoing. It's going to keep showing others that, you know, if I keep working hard, I can accomplish anything that I want.
Now, you mentioned your brother is Shaquille. He's a twin brother, and he was drafted by the Seahawks in the third round of the draft. The spring draft. So it's the first time in years that the two of you have not been on the same team. So what's that been like for both of you?
It's definitely been an experience. You know, you go your entire life with somebody right next to you every step of the way. And, you know, when you make decisions, it's decisions based on the two of you. And now I feel like this year being separated, we was able to find ourselves, you know, grow as men and make decisions that were best for us or myself, actually. And, you know, I feel like, you know, being separated, it was tough at first, but, you know, us communicating and talking about each other's day and seeing what we can do better. And, you know, you get that sense of comfort that, you know, we're doing the right thing. And I feel good about it. You feel good about it. Everything's working out perfectly fine. And, you know, it's an awesome experience. You know, I finally can say, you know, if I want to eat that Debbie cake, I can eat it. And I don't have to say I don't have to have my brother behind me like, you know, I don't think that's best for you. You know what? It's my choice. And I'm going to make it.
That's incredible. Listen, you've never been one who is going to be short on motivation, but when you see what he's doing in the NFL, how much does that motivate you and drive you even more to take that same step?
Oh, man, it motivates me like crazy. You know, I'm always watching every game, and I always critique everything he's doing and kind of take it back and teach it to myself. And it's awesome because it's not only motivating me, but it creates our competition that we've always had our entire life. You know, I always want to be able to beat him out. And he knows it. And that way he try to work so hard because he know that there's going to be somebody always behind him. And he knows that. So it's awesome to see that. Not only motivating, but we always pushing each other, even when we're not around each other.
Yeah, let me finally ask you. I've got a couple of kids, a couple of sons, and we always talk about, and all parents do, about how the kids are so different. They're all different. You know, same house, same nature, same nurture, but they're all different. What about you and your brother? Like, what are you better at than he is, and what does he maybe have your number at? What was it like competing with him growing up every single day, probably at everything?
I mean, my dad used to always say I was more of the aggressor, and my brother was finesse. And we always had that, even when we used to play. You know, literally, he was always that, you know, I want to shake people or, you know, I don't want to be touched. And I was always that one who wants to go head first, and it doesn't matter what happened, it's all or nothing. And I think that's the only difference that we really have. Like, we have the speed, we can run around, we can do a lot of things, but it was always that one difference. He was, my dad always say, a finesse, and I was the one who's, you know, I'm going head first, and whatever happens, happens.
So of all the college basketball headlines lately, this one's got to be the strangest. LiAngelo Ball, shoplifting in China. Now, there's a headline that almost seems like something out of a Mad Lib, like you're filling out the blanks and you need someone to name a famous teenager, a small crime, and a foreign country. Except it's real. The UCLA basketball team is in China, and Ball, along with two of his teammates, Cody Riley and Jalen Hill, were released on bail this morning after being questioned about allegedly stealing sunglasses from a Louis Vuitton store next to the team hotel. The rest of the UCLA team has moved on to Shanghai for a game against Georgia Tech on Friday, but Ball and his two teammates reportedly have to remain where they are until the legal process is ended. And according to ESPN, that process, quote, could take days, weeks, or even months. Listen, I have no idea what happened. I don't know what did or did not happen. And even if Ball or his teammates grab some shades, I'm not going to say it's the end of the world. Now, don't get me wrong. It's not good. In fact, it's bad. It's not something anybody should ever be doing, especially in a foreign country. If they did, it's embarrassing, it's dumb, it's stupid, it's reckless, it's all of that and more. And so, yes, the prospect of three UCLA basketball players, one of whom is a Ball, effectively under house arrest in China, 4 months is pretty crazy. But a big part of me feels like that's unlikely. Then you go from petty crime to international incident. And is there really going to be an international incident over three basketball players and a pair of sunglasses or two? Allegedly. I'd be very surprised. Then again, when you look at how this offseason has gone for college basketball, anything's possible. At the same time, I'm not going to be wringing my hands about the youth of today or blaming the Ball family for this. If he did rip some sunglasses, he's not the first college student to try to do it. And trust me, he won't be the last. So no, I'm not going to be using this as a chance to take shots at the old man, to try to claim that it's all his fault, that if the old man wasn't yammering on about how good he was in college or about how awesome his sons are, that LiAngelo would not have been arrested for alleged shoplifting. That's like the easiest, lowest hanging fruit there is. I could come in with that and then open up the phones and the show would take care of itself for me. I could just put my feet up and let people scream until they're hoarse about the Ball family. But I'm not going to use something that the son may or may not have done to crack on the father just because you hate the father. Not only is it weak, it really doesn't make much sense at all. Just as it doesn't make any sense to turn this into a referendum on one of the most boring topics ever, paying college athletes. I'm not going to try to convince anybody that if Ball were compensated for what he does at UCLA as a basketball player, that he would have bought those sunglasses instead of ripping them, allegedly. Because we don't know that. And there's no way to prove that. Maybe if he got some money from UCLA, he would be throwing down cash or a credit card for sunglasses. But then again, maybe not. Because from the looks of it, the Ball family seems to be doing just fine financially. The kid's tricking around in a Ferrari on their reality show. I don't think he's hurting for that dough. So this is not some indictment of a broken system or another example of how college athletes should be paid. It's an example of a young guy or young guys doing something really dumb, if in fact they did it at all. So if you're looking for me to turn this into some sort of hot take factory, you're going to be disappointed. Because that's not what's going to happen here. Other shows or other hosts may not have anything better to do than that, but I do. I'm not saying that I'm not interested in your opinion or your take on it. I'm saying don't look for me to be grabbing at the low-hanging fruit. Never have, never will. And whatever you do, do not come in here and try to spin this sunglass story into another stupid OJ slash Ron slash Nicole got slashed because of some sunglasses take. I'm not having that either. Oh, quick memo also to UCLA head coach Steve Alford. Next time, you've got 15 hours to kill on a flight from LA to Shanghai, maybe you take some of that time to remind your players who have never left the country before about the dangers and challenges of traveling abroad. And remind them that being in China is not the same as being in America. You know, Steve, do what they pay you to do. Lead, inspire, teach, and look out for your players. 1-800-636-8686. Dear Rome, as long as LiAngelo's house arrest has a hoop in the backyard, we're all good. Signed, LeVar Bail. You know, yesterday the initial speculation was that they could be looking at, if convicted, they could be looking at 3 to 10 years in prison. And rarely, if ever at all, do you get a chance for bail in a situation like that, because it's not like it is here. And sure enough, they got their bail. And I really don't think that local authorities want to turn this into an international incident. I don't suspect that's going to happen. Dear Jim, we are extremely disappointed in the arrest of three of our basketball players in China, especially since we emphasize to every incoming freshman athlete how to locate surveillance cameras, identify undercover security, and exit a business without activating the electronic theft detector. Educationally yours, the administration at USTLA. Signed, Den Lusks, aspiring pickpocket. Yeah, I mean, I know, Den Lusks. It's funny to you because pretty much everything is. But it wasn't so funny to that kid. All three of them, in fact. In fact, I bet it was scary as hell. Again, I don't know what happened or what didn't happen. If in fact they did that, it's one of the dumbest things ever. If they did it. I mean, you might even argue that, do you really have to tell guys not to shoplift in a Louis Vuitton that's attached to the hotel? If they did it, apparently you do. But they may still beat this thing. Out on bail, but now they have to wait. Because there's a process, and the process there is not the same as the process here. Mark Few is my guest. Mark, it is great to have you back. How was your summer? How are things?
Oh, gosh, Jim. Things are good. Summer was great. It was obviously a you know, just an enjoyable off season when you, you know, you have an experience like we had going to a Final Four and being a minute or so away from, you know, winning a national championship. It was just a special, special year, and we enjoyed the heck out of it.
You know, I bet. What a run that was, Mark. What an experience that must have been. And for the guys that are coming back, Jonathan Williams, Josh Perkins, Silas Melson, Killian Tilley, all played big minutes in that title game. What is your sense then about what they took away from that game and the tournament run, and how has it impacted them as players?
Well, I think it, you know, really, really gave them an appreciation for really what it takes to, you know, to run it all the way through to the last game of the year. And they, I think, now understand there's, you know, there's obviously the hard work that goes into it and, you know, the building of roles and chemistry. I mean, we had just an amazing, amazing team last year with multiple, you know, leading scorers, you know, night in and night out, and guys, you know, having big games. Yeah, I think one of the biggest impressions I'm happy of, and I hear them talking about a lot, is you know, defensively, we were the number one defensive team in the country last year, and I hear these guys referencing that quite often, you know, and hoping to aspire to get back to that, because that obviously was, you know, a real big, you know, common denominator with our success.
Mark Few is joining us once again. Now, I know, Mark, over the summer at one point, you decided that you were going to sit down and watch the entire Final Four, including the games against South Carolina and the national championship game. So then you went to pull it up on the DVR, and what happened?
Oh, my beautiful, lovely, greatest person I've ever met in the world, wife, had just somehow deemed that it wasn't necessary to, you know, keep up all those minutes on our DVR. Instead, you know, 17 Disney shows and The Voice and some other things were on there. So, that was a major crisis in our relationship there, or not a major crisis. It was just one. I'm sure you've had many of these with Janet, where you just scratch your head and go, "What the heck were you thinking? I thought I'd known you after all these years."
But you guys got through that, right? You worked through it. You do what you always do. You communicated. You got through it. It's going to be all right, right?
Oh, 100%. I was just like, I don't know. It was unbelievable. And again, I don't usually watch our last game, you know, because usually, as in most cases, in every case except one, it's a loss. But, you know, I really wanted to see from a fan perspective. You know, when you're in the middle of it, Jim, it's amazing. It's one of those things I've told people. There's a lot of things in life you aspire to do or be or whatever, and then a lot of times they don't end up being what you thought they'd be. They're kind of a downer or a little disappointing. You know, making it all the way to that championship game and the Final Four experience is one of those things that far exceeded even what I thought it was going to be. And I wanted to watch it from just the fan perspective and, you know, to see the former players and all those things that were going on. Because when you're in the middle of it, you really don't get to see any of that stuff.
Mark Few is joining us. You know, Mark, it's so great to hear that something that you've worked so hard for, that you've always wanted, that when you finally get there, it not only lives up to the hype, but probably smashes it. However, you and I have talked for years about the fact that the tournament is not a great way to evaluate a team or a season.
Right.
But do you feel like in any way it's a different program, or you're now a different coach now that you've got that Final Four banner hanging or to hang?
I don't necessarily think I'm a different coach or anything. I mean, you know, every year, just like in your profession, you're learning and growing, and experiences kind of tend to make you more wiser. And I think maybe you probably don't get, you know, hung up on some of the smaller things or sweat the little things like you did when you were a younger coach. But again, any time you can do something you've never done before, you know, with your team, with your program, with your school, you know, those are monumental moments that, especially, you know, when you look at the success we've had here at Gonzaga. I mean, you know, it's harder and harder to get to do something that's never been done before. So the fact that we were able to do that, I think, you know, I said that during the run, I think you know, people, I felt it got a little stale maybe with our success, and I think that this re-energized, you know, people nationally following our program, it kind of re-energized people even locally following our program that, you know, just took the Sweet 16s and things like that for granted. But I'm still the same guy, same coach, and you know, here we are again. You start a new season, and none of that stuff, you know, not going to help you make a basket or get a rebound this year.
I'll tell you something else, Mark. Mark Few, my guest. You start a new season, and you start to hear the same kind of things you've heard in recent years. As an example, when you look at the team this year, it seems like everybody outside the program wants to talk about who's not going to be there. Guys like Nigel Williams-Goss, Zach Collins, Jordan Matthews, etc. It seems like every time you have success, the following year, people want to jump and say, yep, but they're going to take a step back, except it doesn't happen. I mean, last year, all the talk was about the fact you lost a couple of key guys to the NBA, then you had your best season in school history. So what do you think when you look at the roster that you have right now?
Well, I think you hit upon it right on the opening in that, you know, we got guys that played major minutes in a national championship game on the biggest stage in college basketball and functioned at a high level. You know, Josh Perkins had 15 at half.
Right.
And so, that's an accomplishment in itself. So, you know, Jonathan Williams was making big plays down to the very end of that thing. Killian Tilly had a huge free throw, you know, at the end of the game against South Carolina to get us to the championship game. And so these are guys that, you know, they're not going to get rattled, and they're not and they understand, you know, competition at the highest level here in college basketball. So we're certainly going to play off that. And we did lose some great players and got a bunch of intangibles like Shemek Karnowski was just a force that, you know, in college basketball that nobody else had, just the size and feel for the game. And Nigel was such a ferocious competitor and leader. And so, you know, Jordan Matthews, what he was able to do, and Zach Collins was a, you know, just a lightning bolt of a star emerging. But the year before, we had lost two NBA guys. We never had two NBA guys in the year that we had to rebuild from. So, this will be a challenge. I think the interesting challenge for us, Jim, and from coaching is we don't have as much depth this year. So I've been really careful in preseason practice of, you know, making sure we're still staying healthy and staying fresh and not wearing guys out. And then we're going to have to play a little bit differently. We're not the big giant behemoth of a team that we were last year. We're kind of smaller and agile and you know, a little more versatile at the big spots.
Gonzaga head coach Mark Few joining us. Makes sense to me. And Mark, one last thought. It's been a tough offseason for college basketball overall, and the sports reputation has taken a few hits. I know how much you care about this game, so what has your reaction been as you watched all of this play out?
Well, you know, I think there's still a lot of things that are probably going to go down as this thing progresses. I think in the long haul and in the end, this is going to be, you know, good for the game and healthy for our game. I think we needed a purging of this. This is something that certainly those of us involved and even, you know, astute media people that are close to our game, you guys knew this was going on or heard about it. And hopefully we can get it cleaned up. And there's so much good still, even in college basketball. It's a shame that, you know, this is garnering a lot of the attention, but it, you know, this is pretty serious stuff, so it should. But there is a lot of good out there, and there's a lot of great stories of whether it's kids coming back or kids overcoming hardships or just, you know, great stories about teams. And you know, all I can tell you is, like, last year in April in Phoenix, I mean, it was amazing basketball. It was an amazing scene. The NCAA did a great job putting on the Final Four. I'd never seen it from the perspective of a team playing in it. And it was a first-class deal. And the ratings were huge. And so, I think at some point we'll us as coaches and everything need to start focusing on the positives. And hopefully we can get this thing cleaned up and get all the bad actors and all the bad stuff out of it. And,
moving forward, because it's an awesome, awesome sport, and it's always been an awesome, awesome view from a TV and live perspective, and you know, there's a lot of good still out there.
Mark Few, my guest. You know, Mark, one last thought. If you're right, you want to focus on the positives, you want to move forward, but at the same time, you have to acknowledge what is going on, and you want to do what you can to clean it up. If there's an unlevel playing field, or you have to go up against somebody or a program that you know is not doing it the right way, I mean, you've got to look yourself in the mirror, you got to sleep at night, but how do you approach that or them when you know that there are things going on that should not be going on that you yourself wouldn't do?
Well, I mean, we have approached it, you know, many times over the years, and I think it's a source of frustration. I mean, you know, at this point now, we're being judged, as you know, on a national level. You know, prior to last year, why won't Gonzaga get to a Final Four? Are they ever going to get to a Final Four? You know, that was a big thing. And then you look back and you think of some of the teams that maybe knocked us out on our runs and all that, and or ones that advanced to the Final Four instead of us. And it's tough. And I think in the past, you know, there's just been this, you know, unwritten rule that you never call people out and all that. And I think we as coaches probably need to do a lot better of calling people out. And we certainly need to make the rules and the penalties a lot, you know, stiffer if you do get caught. I mean, really stiff, like banishment from the profession and, you know, postseason bans of up to 3 or 4 years. I think one of our biggest problems is, you know, we're going to take your banner down after you win the national championship. Well, that doesn't do anything to anybody, and people still benefit from, you know, the runs to these Final Fours and championships. So we just do a lot. We need to collectively all do a better job. I think coaches and administrators and heck, even media that know what's going on and not be afraid to maybe call some people out.
Mark Few, my guest. They're number 18. They open up their season against Texas Southern. I think that's all fair. Mark, it is great to have you back. I'm sorry that the Final Four got vaporized on your DVR, but you know what? Happy wife, happy life, and you could probably find another way to get those games.
We did. We got to work. You know, CBS was great. They heard the story and sent us out some DVDs, which takes a little, you know, a little more work to kind of pop in there and such, but it's all good. It's been forgotten about, and the few family has moved forward.
Billy Shakes. You know Billy Shakes, right? He once said, brevity is the soul of wit. Yeah, sorry, Bill. Sorry to say, wit is dead. Because as of last night, Twitter doubled the character limit for every single user on the platform. All right, so here's my gut reaction, my initial reaction. And I have to admit, it was rather snap. I didn't think about it. I didn't sleep on it. This was my gut reaction. When I found out that Twitter was officially going to 280 and everybody had access to 280, as opposed to 140, my first thought was, worst idea ever. If ever there was an example of less is more, this is it. If anything, they should have cut it in half. Instead of doubling, they should have gone to 70 characters instead of 280. In fact, you want to really improve Twitter? You want to improve Twitter and the entire experience? Board up the freaking windows, shut it down, and let's go home. If really smart people have imploded on Twitter and melted down, and they have, then what chance do really dumb people have? And doubling the characters does not make it twice as good. It makes it 100 times worse. The entire appeal to Twitter was its character limit. It forced everybody to sharpen their game, to step their game up. It fostered cleverness. It was tight. It was easy to read. I can't tell you how much more difficult our job is right now because you're at 280. TweetDeck looks nothing like it used to. And it's not something I think that we're going to adjust to, like, you know, strengthening a new muscle. It's brutal. And most of all, you know what it was? It was a way to kind of cap stupid people with stupid takes. It just was. How much damage could you do in 140 characters? Because no matter how lame somebody was, they could only be so lame with 140 characters. Twitter at its best was beautiful. The microblog of microblogs. It made smart people smarter, and it handcuffed dummies. But that was then, and this is now. And now we're on a first-class ride from internet utopia to internet hell, especially me, because of what I mentioned. Twitter is such a big part of the program. Say it with me. I read more tweets because I get more tweets. But it was tough enough sifting through all that crap to get to the good ones. Now some of you whack jobs have twice as much real estate and make it twice as hard on me to find usable content for the program. Thanks a lot, Facebook. Twitter. You see how hard I hit that? That's how strongly I feel about that. Thanks for nothing, Facebook. Twitter. Thanks for wrecking my life and my talk show. We had a pretty good thing going. We had a sharp knife in that toolbox, and you just doled it down to rubber, Facebook. Twitter. I mean, Twitter I just rebrand as Facebook or as an email server. See, that's the problem. I don't want to read your emails. If you have an email, send me the email. This way we separate the tweets from the emails. But now that we have 280 characters, I can't separate tweets from emails because your tweets are now emails. Let me tell you something. Twitter may have gone to 280, but I'm not. If you think I'm going to sit here and read 280 character tweets on this show, you got something else coming to you. I'm not doing it. Twitter may have gone to 280. Rome hasn't. You want your tweet read on this show, you keep it at 140 or less. In fact, I'm thinking about going to 80 or less. I'm going the other way. Less is more. Man, it's been a tough week. Tough week. I mean, by the way, why stop at 280? That's my concern. Twitter should rebrand as Facebook or an email server or a CVS receipt. Why stop at 280? If you're going to trash the site, go all in. Lift the entire character limit altogether. Let anarchy ensue. You already wrecked a pretty good thing. You may as well light that thing on fire right now. First, AIM announces its slow, painful passing, and now this. Any other brilliant internet platforms want to die today? Reddit, Wikipedia, YouTube. You see, this is why we can't have nice things. We're gluttons. We're never satisfied with what we have. We always want more. I'm here to tell you, less is more. In the case of Twitter, less was the best. Rest in peace, 140. In fact, don't even rest in peace because you're still 140 to me. Clones, I'm not reading your 280. You're not getting a 280 character tweet read on this show. You want to send me an email? Go ahead. I'm not giving up on the 140. We are joined by Raptors head coach Dwayne Casey. Dwayne, good to have you back. How are you?
Doing great, Jim. And I tell you what, Mark Few is a friend of mine. He does a great job at Gonzaga. I live in Seattle in the summertime, and he's a very underrated coach in the college ranks.
Hey, Dwayne, I'm glad you brought that up because, in a sense, he said before you came on that it started to get a little bit stale maybe for the fans, maybe locally. Can you imagine being in Gonzaga and thinking that going to the Sweet 16 every single year is not good enough, that it's getting boring, that it's getting stale? I mean, how absurd is that?
I tell you, that's a great point, Jim. If people in Spokane are bored going to the Sweet 16 and having the success Gonzaga had and the respect they have across, you know, I coached at Kentucky, played at Kentucky, and I know what the expectations are there and what they expect. And, again, I understand the expectations, but, you should never get bored with winning, and that's what Mark has done, and they should never get bored of that. They should be excited and revere him because he's one of the elite coaches in the college ranks.
Dwayne Casey, my guest, I'm going to ask you about your squad, but you mentioned Kentucky. Back in August, you went back to the University of Kentucky for Coach Cal's charity weekend, and of course, Kentucky is a place where you not only played as a captain, but you were an assistant coach. So what's it like when you go back to Lexington?
It's great. As a matter of fact, I had a house there until, a few years ago and sold it. But Lexington is home. I have a lot of friends there, and it's been a great place to go back and visit and everything. And I've been back numerous times, and it's the first time I participated in Coach Cal's charity, which was for a great cause. It was for the Houston flood victims, and so it was a good situation there. But got to see a lot of former players. We had a luncheon, myself, Kevin Grevey, and Jack Gibbons. We all had a lunch, and Kyle Macy had a lunch with Coach Hall the day of the game, and that was great. Coach Hall was telling those stories, and we were telling those stories on him because now we're too old for him to make us run or anything. So we had a great time with the young players and coaching the players that were there that are in the, currently in the NBA right now.
You know, I was going to say, exactly. The guys that are in the NBA right now, I mean, there's such a fraternity among Kentucky players. So when you go up against a former Wildcat player now, is there still a feeling of brotherhood and a bond because you both went to Kentucky?
No question, Jim. I mean, you know they, and I think, hopefully they know that we all have played at Kentucky, and I'm sure the Carolinas and the Dukes and UCLA kids have the same bond and relationships, and we do. And, you know, the other night we played against John Wall in Washington. He didn't play, but we played his team. And so you see again tomorrow night, I've got two guys coming out. We've got Cousins and also Anthony Davis, so and Rajon Rondo. So it's a brotherhood, it's a community, and we understand what it means to play at Kentucky and how important it is to the Commonwealth of Kentucky. And that's a lifelong. And, you know, we had Pat Patterson here in Toronto for a long time, and it was always a topic of conversation, what are the Cats doing in football, basketball, and it was a good relationship.
We're talking to Raptors head coach Dwayne Casey. You mentioned John Wall. You know, Dwayne, the conventional wisdom is that the East is wide open this year. When you look around the conference, is that what you see as well, and how are you approaching it as a team?
Well, right now, Jim, we're more concerned about us building consistency, more so than looking at a conference race or a division race or whatever it is. We're trying to work on ourselves, you know, and again, we're gelling. I don't know if the 2 weeks less of training camp or whatever it is put us behind a little bit. We're still trying to find each other, trying to find a rhythm, a rotation that fits us, and more so than really trying to worry about conference ranking, because I think all that's going to smooth out as the season goes on. But right now, we've tweaked the offense a little bit, and we're trying to get a rhythm with that, trying to get comfortable with that, because it's kind of taken DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry out of their comfort level of running set plays, more so to speak. And so it's something new. So we're getting a rhythm with that. But one thing that we got it, the urgency has to be is on the defensive end. And we've got to make sure we maintain our defensive integrity as we're going along before we really start worrying about a conference race.
Mr. Football got fat. And there's your fat alarm. Somebody gained some weight. A famous athlete gained some weight. That's what the fat alarm is for. Not because I want you to know, but because you all seem to think you need it. Listen, it's not like the jungle has been a safe zone for Jonathan. Which is even more curious because when Adam Hawk ran into him at Super Bowl at a party, he couldn't have been more respectful of the jungle. He was like pro-Rome, pro-jungle. Yeah, maybe sometime we can come together and do that interview. Let's face it, this place has not exactly been a safe zone for Jonathan. Now, when he had it all together and he was on top of his game, I was as big a Johnny Manziel fan as there was. I was fascinated by the kid. Fascinated by his it, his playmaking ability, his athleticism. The things that he did in college were amazing to me. I mean, I got to admit, I was kind of caught up in the it of Johnny Manziel. But then the train came off the tracks, and this has not been a safe zone for him. I'm pretty sure that Alvin, as an example, has worn down that button for the Johnny Idiot Face drop.
Johnny Idiot Face!
Dude had us going from shouting, "It's lit!
It's lit!"
to you clones. Looking at his waistline and screaming, "It's thick!
It's lit!"
Just stop. We're not doing this. We're never doing this. I'm not going there. I don't want you emailing me telling me that Manziel went from saying there is too much money in his bleeping hand.
I can't hear you.
There's too much money in my hand.
I can't hear you.
There's too much meatloaf in my bleeping hand. I'm not doing that. I'm not going to read your tweets or emails on that. So the guy put on a few pounds. Who cares? So he's tipping the scale a little more than normal. Who cares? The dude who used to be rail thin, partying poolside in Vegas, has now plumped up or chunked up a few pounds. Who cares? Now the guy's engaged. He's chilling in Hawaii. And he's what your grandparents might have called a healthy boy. I mean, don't you want to be that guy? Fiance is very attractive. He's in Hawaii. He's on the beach. He's in the water. Looks like a pretty good time. I mean, yeah, granted, if he really wants to come back in the NFL or even the CFL, it's not a great look. Not for a guy like that. Not for a guy who wants a roster spot. But then again, this is a sports show, not an appearance show. Personal appearance still is not show fodder. Never was, never will be. Romageddon was a one-off. That was supposed to be your purge. Why are you still playing that alarm, Alvy? You were... I'll get to you in a minute, young man. You were supposed to get that out of your system.
No.
It's not going to fly now. If I didn't let you get away with your Johnny Zidiot face blasts or jokes about how he must have played dodgeball with a pineapple and lost, then I'm sure as hell not going to let you get away with any of these Johnny Fatzel jokes or Johnny Rockets Manziel glosses or Johnny Manswell blasts. Again, if you weren't allowed to hit me up about him playing dodgeball with a pineapple, you're not getting any of this either. I don't care if this guy gets washed up onto shore like a dead manatee carcass. Until he gets back on the football field and starts scoring tutties, I don't want to hear about him eating Twinkies. We're not talking about it. I'm not talking about it, and you're not talking about it on this show. If you want to do it on your own little show there on Twitter, you go right ahead. Host that show off to the side. That's what it's there for. Just don't bring your show onto my show, because I'm not talking about it. As always, thank you very much for listening. I appreciate you. The Jim Rome Podcast, Episode 12, is now there waiting for you. Green Beret and former football player Nate Boyer is my guest. It's a great conversation that you do not want to miss. Check back here tomorrow for more Daily Jungle. See you then. I'm out.